This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The Federal Communications Commission is set to vote on its 2015 net neutrality rules next week. The term net neutrality is considered to be a basic principle of the internet that prohibits service providers from speeding up, slowing down, or blocking any content, applications, or websites. A new poll by a telecom industry trade group has found massive public support for preserving net neutrality. But under the current FCC chair, Ajit Pai, all that is now in question. Pai has paid lip service to preserving net neutrality but is racing to undermine it. Meanwhile, TV host John Oliver recently covered the FCC and net neutrality on his show, urging his viewers to post their comments to the FCC's website. When its servers crashed, the FCC claimed it was the victim of a cyber attack without offering any proof. My guest is Ernesto Falcón. He is the legislative counsel with the group Electronic Frontier Foundation. Welcome to the program, Ernesto.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like I've done this story several times before, right? This FCC racing to overturn net neutrality rules, massive public support for preserving net neutrality, you know, just huge campaigns from all over the country, and then the FCC backing off. And it seems as though we are, and the concept of net neutrality is constantly at the whim of whoever is leading the FCC at that moment. So we defeated the attacks on net neutrality at least once before, right?
More than once, I would say. There's been kind of several fronts of assaults, both in terms of the legislative front and as well as bad FCC policy.
So even under Obama, it was a fight to preserve net neutrality. Now, Ajit Pai was a commissioner. This is a five-person commission, the Federal Communications Commission. It's appointed. The person who heads it is usually part of the same party that the that is currently in the White House. Ajit Pai was an FCC commissioner under Obama and then was promoted to chair the commission under Trump. What do you know? What can you tell us about his position on net neutrality?
So he's regularly dissented from the direction the Federal Communications Commission has gone on promoting and preserving an open internet. He often talks about it in the framing of government overreach or regulatory overreach. That's simply not the case. The realities are the Federal Communications Commission has litigated this issue, frankly, against the cable industry and the telephone industry, and has lost consistently under previous approaches. It wasn't until Chairman Wheeler decided to adopt a new approach, namely declaring broadband as a telecommunications service, which essentially makes them common carriers, that the FCC was able to firmly, as a matter of law, require a neutral, non-discriminatory, and open internet.
And this is Tom Wheeler, who was the FCC chairman in the latter part of the Obama era. And even he had to be pushed into doing this. And of course, I know a lot of people have said that we really need Congress to legislate net neutrality so that and it's preserved and we don't have to have it constantly at the whim of a five-person panel. So what is, as far as you can tell, what is the FCC currently looking to do? It's basically trying to overturn its own rules, or is it trying to set new rules?
Well, effectively what the FCC is trying to do is undermine its own legal authority so that it can't even create rules. And it's an unfortunate way that the chairman is going about this, Chairman Pai, because he is saying he's promoting net neutrality and that he's preserving or restoring internet freedom and doing nothing as a matter of law to actually make that the case. His entire scheme would be based on the idea that Comcast, AT&T, Verizon will, through their own good graces and benevolence, will ensure that they would never extort their position of power to change the internet to suit them the best and make the most money from it. That's always been the threat, and it's unfortunate that he has such high faith in the major companies.
Well, this seems to be the exact kind of ideology of free market fundamentalism that we see conservative, right-wing, libertarian ideologues espouse, which is the freedom to make profit, the freedom, and they use the term freedom often, right? If we free corporations to make profit without any restrictions whatsoever, the, you know, everything will naturally move into the right thing for all of us. We'll have a natural outcome that's going to benefit everybody. They've applied this in other realms in terms of Trump's aversion to quote unquote regulations that are hampering growth. And it seems as though this is the same ideology that's being applied by the FCC. Let the market take care of it, right?
Well, I think it's more disingenuous than that. I think they will frame it as a free market idea, but the internet is kind of multiple components, right? It's users who decide the next best thing, the next hot product, right? In a truly free market, the consumer is the one who decides what wins, what loses. It's detrimental to everyone who wants to invest in the internet, invest in small businesses and connect to the internet and try and sell their product to the world, all for the purpose of enhancing the power of cable and telephone. So, it's not a free market when only, a very small number of highly concentrated players decide the entire outcome from beginning to end of how the internet marketplace works. It's just unfortunate that they take that framing and quite frankly, I think it's a symptom of D.C. I think if you go outside of Washington, D.C., you talk to anyone about their interactions with Comcast, whether they're conservative or liberal, they think that's a monopoly and they think it needs to be, something has to be done. Monopolies are taken care of by the government, not by the free market. That's always been the case in our history.
So there is clearly very strong bipartisan public support for preserving net neutrality. It's almost, it doesn't matter what your ideology is, your political ideology, and who you might have voted for. Isn't there, don't polls show that the public hugely supports preserving the internet as a free place?
That's exactly right. I mean, they preserve that. They highly support that across, regardless of your ideological background. They support, your privacy when you go online with and kind of restrictions on the cable and telephone companies to protect that privacy. And what the Republicans have been doing is trying to adopt the things that people like to hear and then do the exact opposite, right? They're arguing they're going to promote privacy. They're going to promote internet freedom. They're going to promote a free and open internet. And all this is happening in D.C. is Comcast, AT&T, Verizon come out making bandits. No one's going to be able to curtail their power if there's no laws that restrict enormous amount of market power they have right now.
And just to clarify what's at stake, basically we have a situation today where if you have a small amount of resources and a lot of talent, you can create a presence on the internet, say what you want to say, promote what you want to promote. However, if we push away net neutrality rules, somebody trying to access your website that has Comcast as its internet service provider might find that they have a hard time reaching your website because the service is really, really slow. So you might end up giving up unless you paid Comcast a fee to speed it up, etc. I mean, basically, we're looking at a situation where if net neutrality rules are done away with, we would see a much more stratified internet, right? Where the big companies get to dominate everything, which they kind of do now, but you can still seek out independent sources of information, independent organizations, et cetera, right?
That's right. And the reason why, even though they're giant now, right, the reason they can't do that is because the FCC adopted the open internet order and they would violate the law and face serious repercussions for doing it. That's essentially why Chairman Pai wants to do away with the legal authority, because once you take that away, then, quite frankly, the states are more or less impotent to be able to take on these companies because the types of activities might be considered interstate commerce, which will be the domain of Congress and the FCC. And they're going to be able to have it both ways, right? They're kind of shielded from state protection and then pointing to a federal regulator, but does nothing. It's fascinating. You think about the internet, you think about how every year there's a new best thing, and that's what makes the internet really great, right? It's the vibrancy and the innovation, the ability for anyone with the right amount of talent and willingness to invest their self invest in risk capital can become, you know, the next Mark Zuckerberg. That's still the world of today, but that won't stay if the SEC moves forward with its plan.
I mean, a lot of grassroots organizing happens on the internet, independent, you know, artists and writers, who want to put their views out there or their work out there depend on net neutrality, depend on having that level playing field. So let's talk about what happened on the John Oliver show and what the FCC is claiming. Basically, John Oliver, who's a very strong progressive TV host, did a segment devoted to the FCC and the fact that net neutrality was in trouble. And we want to play a clip from his show. And then when we come back, we'll talk about what happened.
Our government looks set to end net neutrality and let these companies run hog wild, and we're just going to let them.
We need you to get out there and for once in your lives, focus your indiscriminate rage in a useful direction. Seize your moment, my lovely trolls. Turn on Caps Rock and fly, my pretties.
And that was just a tiny sliver of what John Oliver did on the FCC, basically put up the FCC's website, fcc.gov/comments. This is a panel that is supposed to be protecting the public's interest. And so they should be, of course, constantly receiving public comment and acting on it. And then what happened, Ernesto? What happened to the FCC's website?
So shortly after John Oliver's skit came up, the SEC's website kind of buckled. They weren't able to receive every public comment that came in that you know, by law they should be taking into consideration as a agency that, you know, operates on behalf of the public. And they released a press release claiming that there was a denial of service attack, a DDoS attack. We're skeptical of whether
this is basically they're claiming that a crime took place against them, that somebody had a purposeful cyber attack against them.
To that effect, essentially. And, you know, we're skeptical on the premise that, we're curious as to whether the FCC actually has the infrastructure ready to accept millions of comments. And if they don't, that's a serious problem, because then you're essentially denying the public's right to speak through, you know, either incompetence or willful neglect of upgrading the infrastructure. We're investigating the matter. A handful of senators, Senators Wyden and Senator Schatz, Wyden from Oregon, Schatz from Hawaii, sent a very detailed letter asking the FCC to demonstrate, provide the technical proof to show what exactly happened. To kind of get to the bottom of things.
So how has the public been expressing themselves to the FCC? I understand that some commissioners have been basically traveling the country, accepting public comment, having events. So what is that, which they're supposed to do before any major decision, what has that process been like? Has it been well attended? Have they been well attended?
Well, Chairman Pai and Chairman O'Reilly, I don't think they've left D.C. when they have their events. I think almost all their events have been in D.C. I think all their events have been with kind of conservative, hard right organizations, kind of the crowd that they're trying to rile up on their behalf. I don't think they've ever gone outside of the bubble, if you will, and kind of talked to regular people who are not, to be frank, paid by different special interests to be, you know, to essentially clap when you're asked to clap. However, Commissioner Clyburn has gone out to L.A. recently. She actually had an event with a handful of consumer groups and people in Los Angeles. And my understanding from what I've been able to see for that event was it was fairly well attended by really, you know, not people that aren't part of the powerful. Right. There was one individual who testified at their panel. She is an African-American woman who, was homeless and needed the internet in order to get access to some basic to kind of help her, you know, move forward in her life and kind of put her life together. We don't normally think about that. Right. We think people, you know, sit at offices and that's the internet and that's the experience in many parts of this country. But the internet touches so many different lives in so many ways that unless you go out to the people, it's hard to really gather what's happening.
And I think that's such an important point, because today access to the internet really should be considered a right. And particularly communities of color, low-income communities who struggle to get the right kind of service from the internet service provider, who, you know, may not be able to afford it, maybe relying on cell service, maybe relying on, you know, Wi-Fi setups in a public space. All of them struggle to be able to access the internet to do very basic things, you know, from, say, renewing your driver's license, responding to jury duty, getting access to welfare, social service benefits. A lot of that gets done online now, and doing away with net neutrality rules, wouldn't that harm low-income communities of color more so than other groups?
Yes. I mean, I think the reality is when you don't have a lot of income, studies have shown that, you know, you have to make a choice about your internet in the first place. Meaning most of them rely on their cell phone and only their cell phone for all their access. And wireless is an arena where, you know, we've seen more aggressive means to just kind of clamp down on data, clamp down on movement of information, much more so than the wireline market. And, you know, you take away the restrictions on that, you're just going to see much more of this kind of artificial scarcity that's thrown out there and gatekeeping to prevent, you know, new services from coming online if they disrupt the old guard.
Now, Ernesto, the Washington Post recently reported that there was a court case impacting net neutrality that isn't being discussed very much. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, versus AT&T and a federal appeals court earlier on Tuesday has agreed to rehear the case, and that it could actually have implications for net neutrality. What do you know about this case, and what should we be paying attention to around it?
Certainly. So I, you know, this is kind of an interesting case. The Federal Trade Commission went after AT&T years ago on misleading the public about their unlimited data plans, and you know, issued fines and penalized the company. AT&T took the FTC to court, claiming that the Federal Trade Commission has no authority over them as a common carrier. That is premised on the reading of a law under the Federal Trade Commission Act, where there's a provision called the Common Carrier Exclusion Rule. And essentially, the understanding and historically has been the FTC cannot go after common carrier activity. So in telephone, it's essentially like the telephone business model and any issues there. But they can go after advertising, they can go after misleading statements, you know, kind of the commercial speech aspects that.
And this is because today telecom companies like AT&T, because of technology, have their fingers in so many different industries, right? That the work they do is overlapping in so many realms.
That's generally been the understanding. And, you know, for example, like, you know, cable does alarm systems now, right? And so the FCC has always felt it can go after the alarm system advertising, but not like the cable broadband or you know, cable broadband advertising issues or terms of service. That would be the job of the Federal Communications Commission. So what happened was, and this was last year, 2016, the Ninth Circuit found that AT&T was correct in the way they read the law. But correct in the sense that I think was a bit of an overstep. Namely, if a company itself has a core product that's a common carrier service, for AT&T at that time that's their telephone product, which is always going to be, has been a common carrier for decades. Then the Federal Trade Commission has absolutely no role, no jurisdiction whatsoever over the telephone company, including their broadband product. And so what that has done is essentially made kind of created a world where the western half of the United States, and you know, this has national implications as well, that the Federal Trade Commission has no real jurisdiction over telephone companies or in this instance today, broadband companies. The problem with the FCC's plan is, under Chairman Pai, is the idea that he would deregulate and eliminate the common carrier definition of broadband, and then hope that the Federal Trade Commission would handle all the issues. But if this circuit court decision stands, the telephone companies have a complete shield from federal enforcement whatsoever. If the FCC surrenders its authority and the FTC by law cannot exert jurisdiction, then states like California, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Nevada, Hawaii don't have any federal enforcer on the books.
Wow.
The newest development, though, and so there's some hope here, was the Federal Trade Commission filed an appeal, what's called an en banc appeal, which is essentially asking the entire Ninth Circuit to rehear a case. And so the Ninth Circuit agreed to that just 2 days ago. And as of now, at least for the time being, that original decision is not binding law as of 2 days ago. However, you know, we have to wait till the new decision comes out. And if they agree with the original decision, then we're back in the exact same loophole and exemption from federal enforcement issue.
Well, finally, Ernesto, is it too late for the public to contact the FCC before their vote on net neutrality? Tell us about your organization, Electronic Frontier Foundation's DearFCC.org website.
Certainly. So we just launched the DearFCC.org, and I would suggest if people are going to comment between now and next week, go through DearFCC.org, because right now the FCC is not accepting public comment for the next 6 days as part of it's a part of an Open Government Sunshine Act requirement. Essentially, real quick, after Watergate, the laws were passed where federal regulators were not allowed to hear from, essentially lobbyists was the idea, but basically anyone for a week before they make a decision as a means to try and curtail influence. That includes public commentary. So what we developed is this web form that people can fill out, and it will hold your comment until the sunshine period ends, and then we submit them all in bulk. There are lots of other types of websites out there that help people file them, but I worry that they may not be holding them for the next 6 days. And if you submit it now without going through, you know, without holding your comment till next week, it's not part of the official record and they won't be counted.
And just to clarify, by the way, we're talking on Friday, May 12th with one another. When we say next week, we really mean the week beginning May 15th.
Right.
And so we'll post a link to DearFCC.org from our website later today. Ernesto, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest is Ernesto Falcone, Legislative Counsel with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Again, DearFCC.org is the name of that website. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.